number 071615, Camille A. Hallam against the Great Gatsby's Auction. Mr. Hallam.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please the court, my name is Camille Hallam. I'm the plaintiff appellant in this case, and I ask the court for their forgiveness. I'm a pro se appellant, so I may not do say the correct legal terms. This case about an auction I participated in from Chicago to Atlanta via phone. After the auction, I realized that the auction was conducted in a fraudulent way. So I filed a lawsuit in the Circuit Court of Cook County claiming a damages around $1 million. So it's not a small case. The defendant have, due to a claim of arbitration clause, moved to remove the case to the federal court in Chicago. We went to the federal court in Chicago, and first he failed to put a motion to compel arbitration in the circuit court, and second time in the federal court he failed to compel arbitration or get a motion to stay. Instead, he filed a motion to dismiss. And I am claiming that the judge in the federal court have ordered the case for to go to appellate court without anybody asking him to go, not to the appellate, to go to the arbitration without me or the defendant asking that. And I am claiming that the judge have erred in taking the motion to dismiss and treated it as a motion to move to arbitration. I have the first argument I have that the district court erred when he decided to treat Gatsby's motion to dismiss as a motion to stay procedure. There are no statutory or appellate cases law which support this decision. Gatsby failed to mention any case or any law which would support his decision. When he went to the both of us never had an intention to go to arbitration, and I prove this because when he went to the circuit court, he never really mentioned anything about arbitration. He has a chance to compel arbitration at this moment. He didn't. He went to federal court, and in federal court too, he went and he filed a motion to dismiss. And his motion to dismiss was based on venue, no personal jurisdiction in Chicago. He wanted to go to Atlanta, and he mentioned the and then he filed a motion to dismiss based of lack of personal jurisdiction and for state a cause of action, which if he, it was granted to him, the case will be, the part of the case will be done. And he really wanted to have his cake and eat it the same way, that he wanted to get whatever he can do in the federal court, and he never asked for arbitration, but the judge sent the case to arbitration. I will say that I'm standing here complaining for going to arbitration, and I'll say that if he would have lost in the arbitration, he would be staying here and say that I never asked to go to arbitration, the same like me. And I'll say a little bit more, that if I ask for $1 million and if the arbitrator gave me $100,000 and I will not be happy for the $100,000 and he will not be happy for him paying the $100,000, both of us will be staying here and asking. We never ask for arbitration. So the case went to arbitration. We never wanted to. And the cases he submitted, none of them is a Seventh Circuit Court case. He submitted some state court cases in both arguments. He submitted a case from the New York District. And I have submitted 3-4 cases which treat this issue from this Seventh Circuit Court. So the second issue which I have here, after we went to As I said, we really never intended to have a simple arbitration case. Even after the judge sent us to arbitration, we went to the arbitration later and we had a pre-trial hearing. And we told him that we want this arbitration hearing to be very complicated hearing. We want full discovery. We want full depositions and document to produce. We want you to treat this like a case in court. We do not want this simple decision. Both parties have given him this in the pre-trial hearing. The case, maybe I'd say there are 2,000 documents in this between deposition. It took 6 years to do this. This is not to go to the arbitrator and tell him, okay, make up your mind and just tell us who's right or wrong. We wanted, everybody wanted to have his case filled good. The arbitrator during the discovery, we had dispute in the discovery, and then we went to him and he solved that dispute and he said dates. I went to Atlanta, I gave my deposition, I gave all the documents what he wanted me to do, and the other party evaded all the question. He did not produce the document I wanted. We wanted the receipts from the sale to prove that the sale was done in a fraudulent way. After the judge resolved the first, after the arbitrator resolved the first dispute, the second one, his refusal to produce the receipt, the judge said, solve it between yourself. So I felt that there was one-sided discovery. I gave everything and I did not get what I want. And when we appealed with the judge here, the lawyer has made great misrepresentation of facts in this aspect. And he said that the judge has briefed this, the arbitrator briefed this, the judge have discussed this, and he made a decision. The judge clearly said, I'm not going to make a decision, solve it between yourself. I don't know how can I and the other lawyer can solve a dispute, a basis of the court that he refused to give me the document will show me, to assist me in finding. I believe that the arbitrator manifestly disregarded the law when he refused to resolve this party discovery disputes. And this discovery, we agreed to it from the beginning. It was our intent to have this discovery, and he violated our request for him. Same thing. As we went to this complicated arbitration, which took 6 years to do, we asked the judge at the end to give us a decision, so we know that fairness was done, which has the most complicated decision, the one to the arbitration. AAA allows, which call arbitrator, which have conclusion of facts and what is called? Yeah, award containing facts, finding of facts, and conclusion of law. And I have instructed my attorney from day one to put that in the requirement of the arbitrator. And the arbitrator, he did a 2.25 pages. It's like a personal opinion. It has no cases. It has no basis of law.
You're saving 2 minutes for rebuttal. You're using them up.
Yes. No, I can stop now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Hector.
May it please the court, Mr. Halim. Good morning. I'd like to talk a little bit about the procedural background because you might be mistaken if you give much credence to what you just heard about it. This was not a 6.5-year case. It was not a 4-year case. As a matter of fact, from the filing of the complaint, which occurred on October 9th of 2003, through the disposition and award by the arbitrator, the case took about 2 years. So I want to give you a thumbnail sketch of what happened. As I say, the case was filed in Cook County on October 9th of 2003. On November 21st of 2003, Gatsby's removed the case to federal court, and on December 19th, it timely filed a motion to dismiss based upon, among other things, an agreement between the parties to arbitrate any disputes that arose between them in connection with the auction that Mr. Halim described. In other words, in the very first substantive pleading that was filed by Gatsby's in the case, we invoked the arbitration proceeding. Then on May 4th of 2004, the district court ordered the case stayed and referred it to arbitration. Mr. Halim subsequently filed a claim with the AAA. The parties conducted limited discovery, and the case proceeded to a final arbitration hearing, which was heard by the Honorable Conley Ingram, a former Supreme Court Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court. Justice Ingram ultimately issued a detailed ruling in which he denied the claims of Mr. Halim in their entirety. He went through them each and one by one, analyzing why they failed, and ultimately ruled, quote, that all of the theories of recovery asserted by the claimant have been carefully considered. It is regretful that the auction experience was less than satisfactory to the claimant, but the law and the evidence do not afford him any legal relief. And as I say, he then proceeded to look at each and every one of the claims and explain why it was that they had no merit. There was then, by Mr. Halim, a motion to vacate that award that was filed. Gatsby's, in turn, filed a motion to confirm. Gatsby's also sent a Rule 11 letter to Mr. Halim and his counsel, and they declined to withdraw their motion to vacate, and we thereafter filed a Rule 11 motion. The district court entered an order denying the motion to vacate. It confirmed the arbitration award and thereafter granted Rule 11 sanctions in the amount of $7,187.50 against appellant's counsel. Now, before getting into the substance of my arguments about why the court should deny the appeal, I want to bring up a jurisdictional issue that has to do with the Rule 11 sanction, and I apologize, this was not in our brief. But it is a jurisdictional matter that the court, I believe, is inclined to consider in any event. And that is that in this case, the sanction was imposed only against appellant's trial court counsel. But the notice of appeal only names appellant as a party to the appeal. In such a case, the court does not have jurisdiction with respect to the Rule 11 of sanctions. And for that proposition, I would cite the court to the Holloman versus Mailwell Corporation case, which is at 443 F3rd 832. That's an 11th Circuit case, and it is spot on. It says, in this case, the sanctions were imposed not only on the attorney, were imposed only on the attorney. The notice of appeal stated only the parties, not the lawyers, who are appealing the judgment of the court. This case is therefore more like the Bogle case, where we refused to hear an attorney's appeal of Rule 11 sanctions imposed only against the attorney because the notice of appeal only listed the client, not the appellant. The court went on. Vaughn, who was the party in that case that filed the appeal, therefore failed to file a proper notice of appeal, and we lacked jurisdiction to hear his appeal from the sanction order. Accordingly, we are constrained to dismiss Vaughn's appeal for lack of jurisdiction. So I would submit that the court does not have jurisdiction to consider the Rule 11 sanctions in this particular case. Now, with respect to the question of whether or not there was a waiver, essentially there are two arguments made by Mr. Halim that we waived our right to invoke the arbitration provisions of the agreement. The first being that we did not file a motion for a stay and to compel arbitration, but rather a motion to dismiss. And secondly, that we removed the case and filed a motion to dismiss in the district court in connection with invoking the arbitration provision. With respect to the notion that we should have filed a motion to stay, I would first note that the appellant failed to raise that argument in front of the district court. And if indeed the appellant believes that anything appropriate was done in connection with compelling arbitration, that should have happened before the court below, even if on a motion for reconsideration. Appellant acknowledges in his brief that despite the ample jurisprudence out there with respect to arbitration, there are no cases anywhere, despite what Mr. Halim just told you, no cases that support the notion that a district court may any cases that support the notion that the district court may not stay the case when it has a motion to dismiss before it that invokes an arbitration provision. We cite a number of cases, including First Circuit cases, Fifth Circuit cases, and in that First Circuit, the Berkovich case, it cites Fifth Circuit and Ninth Circuit cases that stand for the proposition that if all of the issues that are before the court are to be arbitrated, the district court can actually dismiss the complaint. It does not have to stay and compel arbitration. Essentially, what this sort of submerged thesis here, the underlying premise here, is that Mr. Halim is saying, gee whiz, you should have granted the motion to dismiss, which makes no sense at all. He wanted to be able to make his claims. Moreover, it exalts form over substance if you accept what Mr. Halim is arguing here. Essentially, what he is saying is you should have sent Great Gatsby's back at the district court level to simply go back and change the caption of what it was asking the court to do. And generally speaking, I submit to you that the federal courts do not exalt form over substance like that. The court has the power to take a motion to dismiss, like a motion to dismiss and convert it to a motion for summary judgment. It can take a motion to dismiss that has merit and convert it in a motion to stay. With respect to the question of whether or not we waived based upon removing the case and filing a motion to dismiss, there is no authority that would support the proposition that we did anything suggesting that we had an intent to waive our rights to invoke the arbitration provision. And as the court in the Grumhouse decision held, which is, I believe, the clearest articulation of standard for waiver in this particular circuit, the central question is whether a party against whom a waiver is to be found intended its election and not whether the party would be prejudiced by a forum change. In the case of implied waiver, we must determine whether, based upon all the circumstances, the party against whom the waiver is to be enforced has acted consistently with the right to arbitrate. In this case, Gatsby's did exactly that. The removal of the case did not indicate no intent to arbitrate, only where the motion was to be filed. The fact that we asked for a motion to dismiss based upon some substantive grounds so that those would not be waived under Rule 12B does not indicate that we did not intend to arbitrate. It indicated that there was good lawyering going on, because if the motion to arbitrate was denied, then Gatsby's would not want to waive the other defenses that it would be required to bring by way of motion before filing a responsive pleading. That is an indication of good lawyering, not an indication of an intent to waive. All of the cases they cite, Mr. Halim cites, involve discovery for 10 months, filing cases in other places in the courts, and pursuing a litigated solution, as opposed to where the arbitration provisions are immediately invoked. In terms of whether or not the district court properly confirmed the arbitration award, I would simply point this court to the sort of hodgepodge of notions that Mr. Halim has presented in his brief. They first of all say that the arbitrator manifestly disregarded the law. Then they say he imperfectly executed the arbitration agreement, which is the statutory standard. Then in the verbiage of the argument, he goes back to manifestly ignored the law or disregarded the law. I would submit to the court that in the absence of some sort of finding that the arbitrator either required the parties to do something illegal or said, I recognize that the law requires me to do X, yet I'm going to do Y, then the manifest disregard standard is not met. With respect to a challenge under 10A4 of the statute, you have to show that there was an imperfect execution of the agreement such that the decision of the arbitrator and the award of the arbitrator is indefinite, does not completely dispose of the matter, and cannot be interpreted by the district court in a manner that will allow it to enforce the award. None of those things are argued here. The only thing that Mr. Halim argues of any substance is that the arbitrator did not decide a single discovery dispute. And what the arbitrator did was told the parties, when Mr. Halim moved to compel and said, I want this remedy, please give me this remedy, the arbitrator said no. He just did it the way we Southerners do, by avoiding the question and saying, go try your case. He was a little more genteel, perhaps, than what Mr. Halim was used to, but I would submit this court also say to Mr. Halim, no. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richter. How much time does Mr. Halim have? Thank you. You have 1.5 minutes.
Thank you. First thing, the case, I attended the auction 2001 and today in, I think it was late 2000, so when I said 6 years, this is the time the case took from the time of the auction till today. I wasn't misleading the court. I hope the court, and I'm sure this very high quality court will read my brief and Mr. Rickman's brief, and he attacked me personally. And I think I get in here because his personal attack against me in all the trial till now. And I am confident that when you read the brief and read the cases, what we presented and he presented, that we will prevail. Because the question that nobody asked for arbitration is undisputable. The question of the judge did not answer my question, my request for producing the receipts is a requirement by the law that the judge adhere to our agreement. Arbitration agreement is an agreement that we do it and we revise it, and we can revise it. The fourth party can revise that agreement anytime. And we have revised this agreement requesting him to do a discovery. And the law requires him to do discovery, equal discovery, not one-sided discovery. He has taken from me a very important right to see the receipt and see how the action was conducted in fraudulent way. I have no way to find that except if I don't at least the district. And I thank you very much, Your Honor, and thank you.